I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
I'm Michael Polignano.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. Well, Countercurrents is in crisis right now, as is the rest of the white advocacy dissident right in America, because after the Charlottesville Unite the Right event, there has been a moral panic in the public mind and a concerted, coordinated effort exploiting that moral panic to shut down as many of our websites and sources of payment as possible. So last Tuesday, Countercurrents lost our PayPal account. On Wednesday, the Countercurrents Facebook page was deleted, and I also had my personal Facebook account blocked for 24 hours. And then on Thursday, we received notice from our web hosting company that they wanted us gone. And in all of these cases, what they do is cite these politically correct terms of service agreements that basically have been dictated for years by the far left. The far left has been putting in place the architecture to censor us and to fire dissidents from their jobs by creating politically correct terms of service and employment for large companies. They basically go in and they dictate to these companies, and they probably threaten them a bit, threaten to rough up their market share and things like that if they don't go along with it. And so after decades now of laying the groundwork for a massive purge of the dissident right, that purge is underway. Now, what I did immediately, of course, is I looked at this as an opportunity. And so we went out and found other ways of funding, and we went to our donors and we said, this is a catastrophe, and it is a catastrophe. We need immediate support. So we have gotten thousands of dollars in donations over the past more than a week now from many, many donors. And there are really too many to go into on the air as we've been doing in the past, but I have been writing to everybody a personal note of thanks. Really, what's happened is like that scene in Dunkirk when you see suddenly this vast flotilla of little boats, big and little boats, coming to the rescue. That's how I feel about our donors. They have come to the rescue in donations big and small, and we're very profoundly grateful for that.
Absolutely. I was just blown away seeing all these donations come in such a short notice in this time of need. It was inspiring to see that PayPal, even though they shut us down without good reason or cause, that it really is not going to affect our bottom line.
It's probably not. I mean, we still have to, we've lost a lot of monthly donors, and we have to get those monthly donors back in some way or another, or we really will be in trouble. And of course, I'm bracing myself. I'm cowering. I'm biting my nails and losing sleep at the thought of other deplatforming that might be coming down the pike that could be very devastating. So one of the things that we're just trying to do is get as much cash as we can and store it up, because winter is not coming. Winter is here for the dissident right. Winter is here for white advocates. Winter is here for us. And we need to be prepared for that. And it might be a long winter, but eventually I think there'll be a thaw. And we are fortunately not little happy grasshoppers. We have been industrious ants. We have been building up money. We've been building up donors, and we've been building up human capital. And we're now really in a position where we have the money, we've got the capital, we've got the people, we've got the network necessary to start creating alternatives to this current system, this current online system that's so vulnerable. And we're going to start first building an electronic ethnostate, and that's going to be our little fortress on the internet from which we can hope to sally forth and send forth our missives and our arrows and our ravens, right? And try and create real ethnostates eventually. So that's a huge project that is coming down the pike. And we have a guest coming on a little later to talk about that project. I just want to say that if you want to donate to Countercurrents, please do it now. We do need to build up a war chest basically. That's what we're doing, building up a war chest. You can do so by going to Countercurrents, go to the donate page. We have a credit card form that you can use. And also we have a new account at Hatreon. Hatreon is an organization run by a person on the dissident right. It is basically Patreon for the quote-unquote haters that Patreon will not allow to use their services anymore. And we want this company to succeed because we want it to not only help us, but to help all of our people. And we have to have our own platforms, our own companies, our own funding sources like Hatreon. So please go to Hatreon. There's an article on the front page of Countercurrents about Hatreon and how to become a patron of Countercurrents through Hatreon. So please go to Hatreon and make a donation. You can also make a Bitcoin donation, or you can mail money to our P.O. Box in San Francisco. Beyond that, we are going to start offering the ability to donate in all the existing cryptocurrencies. We're creating a tutorial on how to do that. And so Countercurrents is going to be stronger than ever eventually, once we can get all these things in place. And I think we'll be better able to weather future deplatforming attacks, which surely will come. Now, there are a couple things that we should mention at this point.
Can I just say, I'm really humbled by the fact that there are people who value what we do so much that they would actually be willing to fork over their hard-earned money to us. I was really touched by the fact that so many people were willing to help us in that regard. So I also want to say thank you. But I've gotten a number of alarmed emails from friends, you know, who said, you know, what's the future of Countercurrents going to be? And, you know, I think we would all agree. I mean, whatever happens, I mean, as long as we're still alive or we're not in prison, we don't seem to be at that point just yet, we will find some way to keep doing what we're doing. So the help that you're sending us will be used somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully it won't get any worse than it already is, at least not right away. But if it does, we will find a way to adapt and to survive. So,
right. And with, for instance, our web hosting, we were basically at the same place for more than 7 years. Mike created this environment more than seven years ago where our website was hosted. And on the principle of it's not broke, don't fix it, we just sort of let the thing run. And that thing was getting a bit long in the tooth. We have now found another place to host it that is going to cost us less money every month and give us a better back end so we can have a more up-to-date, sleek, and functional web zine. So what's happened, again, is this crisis has been turned by us into an opportunity. We are using it as an opportunity to do some house cleaning, to reconfigure the back end of the website, and to save some money on our monthly hosting bills, because it turns out we could have been saving money if we shopped around a bit. So this is all very good. And the new website is not going to be as vulnerable as the old one. The old one was protected by, basically, we had an account with Cloudflare. And so Cloudflare kept secret the location of the actual site. And not knowing this, we were having some Cloudflare problems, and I think in the fall of 2014. So I said, why don't we just shut this off? And I had no idea what I was doing at the time. Mike wasn't with us at that time, and I couldn't ask him. So I said, yeah, just shut it down. What the hell? Well, it took more than 2 years for us to see why that was probably not a good idea. But we did skate along for more than 2 years without being attacked. And we will not be as vulnerable in the future. Also, the new setup is going to be much more resilient. So even if we do get shut down, we can spool up a new web host service. I don't even know the proper terms, guys. Forgive me. We can spool up a new service very, very quickly in the future. So this is all good. We are taking this crisis and we're turning it into an opportunity. We're becoming stronger. We're becoming more resilient. And that's how winners behave, right? We're taking this not as an opportunity to black pill, get down in the mouth, and so forth. We're taking this as an opportunity to get better, to get stronger. But it hasn't happened yet. We're not fully done yet. and there's more coming down the pike, so your support is needed. Again, we're building up a war chest, and we're exploring options, and eventually we're going to launch something new. We're going to launch a complete integrated electronic ethnostate where we can cover everything from domain registration to web hosting to managing email accounts, and it will be under our control, and it will not be something that can be easily taken down. We're going to have our own servers. This is something we should have been doing a long time ago, and I've had friends and supporters who have been Cassandras telling us, this is going to happen, and I've always said, yeah, we'll manana, we'll cross that bridge when we've come to it. Well, we're at the bridge. And there is no bridge. There's a chasm, and we've got to leap over. And so at this point, I want to turn to Louis Cipher, or as I like to call him, Le Chiffre. He is our tech and security guy, and he is going to help us build our electronic ethnostate, and he's been saving our bacon ever since this crisis began. So, Louis, welcome to the show. Are you there?
I am.
Great. Thank you well. So we've got this lag, so I need to just pause and let you speak. So just, and I didn't really hear you. You kind of cracked up there. So do you want to just say hi again?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for the very warm welcome.
So, Mike, you and Louis have been working together on this. So why don't you guys sort of have this conversation, and John and I will just kibitz from the sideline and ask naive questions occasionally for the non-tech people out there.
Sure. Well, I was introduced actually to Louis a while back at the Countercurrents retreats when we first got them going. I forget when the first one was in Santa Cruz, if it was 2010 or 2011. But we've been in touch since then about various upgrades and things we can do for the site. But of course, when you're talking about upgrades, there are always, you know, more things you can theoretically add on to improve performance and to improve functionality and to improve security. But as far as practically getting down to business and doing it, that usually comes as more of a thing that's done out of necessity than as a thing that's done in advance. And in terms of this latest crisis, you know, seeing the Daily Stormer go down and this domain registry snatch that Google and Namecheap apparently have done on two of Daily Stormer's domains, namely dailystormer.com and dailystormer.lol, you had talked about a domain name alternative, a domain name service alternative that would allow the emerging electronic ethnostate to basically have its own distributed service. Yeah, I think that was a really interesting suggestion. So, yeah, Louis, I'd love to hear you talk more about that and about other recommendations you have for pro-white dissidents in cyberspace going forward.
Well, one thing I think we've learned, certainly with the website that we've had and we've evolved with and have been scrambling this past week to preserve and make sure we can move it, that our existing technologies aren't going to be sufficient going forward. And that's been brought home in the last 2 weeks, especially now that the backbone of the internet, or at least the folks who manage the policies like DNS and the domain name registrars and the hosting services that were normally at least either reasonably friendly or indifferent, are now almost on cue, it would seem, actively trying to silence us. And this does not bode well. So everyone is sort of all in and using or abusing, you know, sort of Internet 1.0. And that's what everything we're doing on is now sort of platform. And that platform is now being owned or pwned, if you will, by our enemies. So what there's two things. One, we need to sort of clean up our existing 1.0 act, because we've kind of let many things and best practices go to seed. And then the second thing we need to do, and this may be an opportunity, because there's surprisingly I like this new term that I'm hearing in the last month of the alt tech community, which is sort of people who aren't necessarily in Silicon Valley, but are trying to push the internet into a newer, better place. That includes having a truly distributed internet that's peer-to-peer for storage, computation, security, pretty much the whole nine yards, and doesn't have any single points of failure, nor does it even allow centralized, opaque services that can kind of, once they get big enough, dictate back to everybody else. So there's a lot of trends going on there, and I think we can't boil the ocean, but we can certainly start making moves to start learning about and acquiring and teaching this technology wherever we can. The first one that is really important, and it's basic, and it's one I've been evangelizing for some years, is just encryption. And I would have thought after the revelations in the last 10 years, especially the more recent ones from Snowden and some of the other leakers, as well as WikiLeaks itself, that people would realize that we are, in fact, living in a surveillance state. That lesson hasn't been taken home to heart by people, especially in our community, which is kind of sad. So we need to up our game in terms of just simply adopting the practice of securing our communications and our data. I've worked with clients who often were in the old days in the Patriot movement, and whenever they were raided, the first thing that was taken were their computers, which turned out to be a gold mine to widen the net of either arrests or surveillance or harassment even wider. That will happen to us if we don't start practicing better digital hygiene. Is that too general so far? I'm trying to start high level.
That's perfectly fine. I basically wanted kind of a broad overview of directions that the emerging alt tech has to go in. Regarding some of these distributed services that you mentioned, for instance, SSL and security certificates being distributed peer-to-peer as opposed to being centralized with a certificate authority and all that, would you say that the distributed model is as secure as the centralized model? And is this something that you could see users of the mainstream normie, quote-unquote, internet switching over to without much hassle? Or is it going to require them to learn new technologies and, adapt?
That's a toughie. That's a real toughie, because one thing people in general and Americans in particular, we love convenience. In fact, almost every killer app you can probably think of in any field is something that just, whether it's from McDonald's and fast food or, just a fewer clicks, on the app make the difference between success or not, because, people don't like to waste time. They hate voicemail hell, multiple menus. And so whatever the interface is, if they have to think too long or too hard about anything, they'll avoid it. And if you think about it, we're at war, but the war is quiet. It's almost unobtrusive. And we have to practice the same kind of need to know and the same kind of loose lips attitude in not only the things we do and say, but in the apps we use and how we use them. Most people, when they buy an app or download a free one from, the Play Store or the Apple Store, they click through the terms of service. And if you go back and read some of those about what that terms of service that you clicked through and gave implicit legal consent to is, more often than not, shocking in terms of many of these apps are then allowed to go into your address book and through your phone and get your geographic data, and can then send it back to the mothership to do whatever it is they want. And when people actually read the terms of what they can do, there's actually some videos out that try to educate people on this, and then they just show the look on people's faces when they realize what they clicked on just because they wanted to get on with it. So the human thing is going to be really hard. There's no technology, though. There's no software, there's no hardware or combination thereof that can take away responsibility for privacy and doing stuff like this. The way I like to explain it to people, it's a bodily function. It cannot be outsourced. So people are going to have to learn, if they're serious about waging a cultural war or even eventually perhaps, unfortunately, a hot one, they're going to have to start learning the practices and the rules of engagement for doing that. And that means, you know, being careful about what you use and having better digital hygiene and not overly depending on a system to save your ass.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, there are a few different levels going on here. On the one hand, you know, we do have to have an outreach to new people who are just kind of getting on board and just kind of figuring these things out for themselves and going through the red pill process.
People who aren't revolutionaries yet.
Exactly. And you can't expect those people to be expected to adopt and to pick up, for instance, Tor browser to go find Daily Stormer on the dark web. You know, not saying that Daily Stormer is the site that people need to have as a crucial part of the red pilling process. But if other movement websites, if Countercurrents and Amren and VDare and all these other mostly informative intellectual websites aimed at whites with high IQs are forced to disguise themselves, I mean, I imagine the whites who are motivated enough to find them will do whatever's necessary. But there's not going to be as many new people who just kind of by chance stumble into our ideas through like a Google search or something like that.
There may be alternative ways without people shouldn't have to become, you know, nerds or geeks or overly technical. And we can take some lessons from the tech industry and the Amazons and the Googles with some of the things they're doing out of their playbooks. So, for example, Siri or the software appliances that you talk to in your home that become your own personal version of HAL. And it actually dovetails in nicely with some of the new distributed internet ideas and prototypes that are starting to float out there, where if we could create a very simple Fisher-Price appliance, if you will, that's in the price range of no more than twice what a, you know, a high-end, you know, PlayStation. I don't know what gamer consoles run these days, but they're, I think they're $200, $300, $400, something like that. Have something in that ballpark that people could simply plug into their internet connection at home. And then it transparently gives them access to not only the regular internet, the private, the dark net, and include also the distributed internet, which is being built now. It doesn't exist, but it can be deployed very, very rapidly because unlike a centralized internet, it's distributed. There's no central servers. Every time someone adds one of these pods or appliances, a rising tide lifts all boats and it gets stronger. So just like in the Tor network, for example, the more people that use it, the stronger and more resilient it becomes. Having, you know, tens of thousands and hundreds and maybe eventually millions of these things out there would literally kill three or four birds with one stone. And they could even be incentivized by letting them participate in digital currency mining operations done collectively, either by individual nodes or groups of them, just like the miners do now with Bitcoin. So it's entirely possible we could, just as China started straight to wireless and bypassed laying copper lines because it would take the next 10 years of copper production to duplicate what we did here, we might have the ability to completely leapfrog the existing internet and be the alt tech people who deploy our own. And by the way, we just also happen to have the best ideas to go along with the best technology.
I was just going to say, you know, speaking again as somebody who's not so tech savvy, this sounds really great what you're talking about, but I'm just curious, is there any way? I mean, we have to assume that things are only going to get worse as far as the establishment goes. So are there ways that either corporations or governments can use to shut even these sort of mini networks down? Or is it something that's really hard to combat in that sense? I mean, I guess they still have to physically exist somewhere.
Right. So the end game, as I see it, would be where, I mean, if the internet was deployed the way the alt tech or the alternative network guys, and they've been floating this idea around for well over a decade or longer, leveraging the best of what's done in the internet now, but redoing some of the protocol stacks and redoing things such that the, again, the network itself becomes the computer. So, for example, the distributed networks wouldn't use DNS. The reason we can be shut down is because we're still thinking, even the guys who designed the internet, which was designed to be a network to secure communications in the event of nuclear war. It's a packet switch network, which basically means, I don't know if anyone on this call is old enough to remember phone calls 20 or 30 years ago, where when you made one, you hear, before you connected and spoke to anyone, you heard a series of clicks.
Oh, yes. I remember.
Anyone remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Those clicks were basically relays between you and whoever you were talking to that were clicking in, so that at the end of that, they established a dedicated circuit of 2,000 mile long copper wires. And so that was a single path, but that's very vulnerable. If you have a real war and things get blown up or a major hub gets gone, you know, you're dead. Now, in the case of the internet, the way it works is entirely different. Your communication is turned into bits, and those bits, a stream of bits, that stream is turned into a series of packets. And then those packets are turned loose almost like carrier pigeons, but each pigeon has a number, you know, like 1 through 1,000 packets, and they're sequent. And then they can each take a different path rather than a single circuit to get their way home, and they can arrive out of order. So they flow around the damage that was anticipated during nuclear war. So the old internet saying that they look at censorship or bombs as damage, and it flows around. That was the real strength of the internet, and has allowed it to scale unlike any other human invention in history, from, you know, 30, 40 years ago to like 12 nodes to, I forget how many billion it is now, and that number will probably increase by 100 with the Internet of Things. But the whole notion is that network doesn't have to have centralized servers where your content lives. Your content, those packets, if you will, that are now sent on the wire, those can actually live in different places. So you don't have to go to one place to get a file. If you're familiar with BitTorrent, where they share and distribute the load, both for transmitting as well as storage, that's what the internet as a whole would be like. So rather than an application that does that, the infrastructure of the internet would behave very similar to that, so that your files are distributed in a place that you wouldn't necessarily know, but it would be all over in general and nowhere in particular.
Right.
Almost like a hologram. Well,
oh, so like with a torrent, it would be dozens or maybe even hundreds or thousands of people all feeding into this one stream. And basically, if a few of those people get knocked off or leave or whatever, it still survives. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So in the same way that the internet now survives in terms of circuits, you take that one level further. And you do it with storage. So the internet as it is now basically still has single points of storage and named specific addresses where everything lives that you either have to know, or you go to something like DNS and type in the name, and then they give you the address of where that file is. Internet 2.0 kind of turns that on its head and says, you type in the name of your file or whatever it is you want, right? And then locally, that's turned into it gets kind of technical, but the content itself determines the address, you know, but that address gets resolved into multiple locations that neither you know nor care about.
I think I get it.
Oh, well, things have been moving in this direction for a while, right, with like cloud storage as a replacement for local storage on your network.
I agree with that. Let me interrupt there. Cloud is more of a marketing thing, and cloud storage is the way cloud is done now. A cloud, just all that means is somebody else's server at their address in their building with their name on it and under their control. So when you have a Google Cloud or a Microsoft Cloud, Azure or something like that, or Amazon Web Services, you're essentially renting space in either very upscale, you're an upscale tenant, or you're a Section 8 tenant, and the landlord is the same.
Right. You know, you're right about that. I was actually thinking more about new services. Like, I don't know if you're aware, with Microsoft Windows 10, their update systems, when they release a new update, it's actually not like it has been with previous versions of Windows, solely released from Microsoft via its servers, but it's actually distributed and distributed in a peer-to-peer as well with a security key and certificate and everything to make sure that you're getting the actual update that Microsoft releases. But it is done in a distributed manner like that, which is something that's new. I think BitTorrent was the first to really kind of capitalize on just the speed and availability of this distributed network system, and just the fact that we see the Pirate Bay still online after all the attempts that have been made to shut that website down tells you the resiliency of this distributed network idea and system. So I hope that it does get rolled out in the domain name arena as well. Do you see this technology as becoming available and integrated into web browsers like Chrome and Firefox? You know, I think probably it would be Firefox before Chrome, just because Firefox is not affiliated with any particular corporation. But do you see this technology as being present in browsers a year from now, 2 years from now, or how long do you think it'll take until it's available?
Well, there's demos of it now that are working. I've seen some of these, and I've been following some of the thought leaders that are doing stuff with this. And you have to remember, the internet is about 40 years old. The web, 20, 25, thereabouts. And it was the web that kind of made the internet, gave it a big bunch of gasoline on the fire, because it was a protocol, one of dozens of protocols on the internet that took off and gave us the browser and became very, very convenient and easy to use. I mean, the browser is almost like a two-way television that everyone now knows how to tune and work with. And they go there first because you can, there's a gazillion channels on that are defined by those addresses, right? So it's a relatively simple matter if you have other protocols, which is what we're talking about, to have browsers or their equivalent use those protocols or adopt existing browsers and tools wherever they're able and take advantage of similar interfaces and use those protocols under the hood. So yes, absolutely, that all that can be done is being done. You can see examples of it. Maybe I'll put together a little care package of links where people can read and hear people talk about this and see some demonstrations of it, and it'll click, because it's kind of hard to talk about, because the real work is very low on the stack, meaning it's very techy, but the basic ideas are, it's not going to look much different to end users, but the end results will be a very different network that's not only safer and more secure, but also higher performance, because those single points of failure were often put in place not out of malevolence, but because it was just easier to manage. And if it turns out now that you can actually get better performance by going distributed and decentralized, that's going to happen. In the same way that the cyber currencies, if you think about it, what we're talking about is doing to the internet what is happening with digital currencies like Ethereum and Bitcoin. And many of the back-end technologies that made Bitcoin possible are going to make this new internet possible as well. That's a pretty amazing new wave that's coming and is going to wash over us in the next 2 to 3 decades.
So really, there is no effective way for the powers that be to counter something like this, because it's something that's just made possible by the structure of the internet itself.
Yes. I mean, the reason the banks are trying to find ways to adopt Bitcoin, use it, or its underlying technology blockchain is, every place that you see a middleman in anything, not just banks, but any business that relies on people trusting a central authority of any kind. Let me repeat that. Any place in our culture now, and especially one that's, any institution, let me put it that way. Any institution that relies on people now to trust a centralized authority for anything is vulnerable to these new technologies. Any place where it makes sense for what's normally private and depends upon trust to be made open and not opaque is vulnerable.
Well, that's a really great thing. And that's something that is good not only from the perspective of a dissident on the alternative right, but also in a broader sense, just as a society, I would think, it would be a good thing people would want as a community for trust to be not placed in the hands of some oligarchy, you know, of people in power, but distributed in this fashion through technology amongst all the users of the internet.
Imagine having apps where people could rely upon the information they got because it's publicly verifiable. I mean, one of the virtues of open source is that, at least in principle, if you're a geek, you can go read the code yourself and make sure it is what it claims to be. But imagine having systems, whether it's for voting or maybe it's bookkeeping for a public corporation. Maybe it's title records and property or the DMV. And remember, every centralized hub like that has lots of inherent friction, because you have people that want job security, have no incentive to make it friction-free. But if you can get better results, whether it's voting or getting the title to your car or your property, and you could do it in seconds at almost zero cost, just like you can have financial transactions with Bitcoin across national borders for, you know, 10 cents or fractions of a penny, when if you do it through your bank, it'll cost you $24 to $100 and you wait 72 or more hours. So lots of institutions that have been around far longer than the internet existed depend on these kinds of things. And now we have, for the first time, a technology that can, like a tsunami wave, roll over almost any institution that has those kinds of intermediaries in the middle.
Yeah, well, that introduces a whole bunch of interesting questions, because, you know, on the one hand, that's going to take away jobs, you know, a lot of low-level jobs from people that are paper pushers kind of acting in the bureaucracy. And there's definitely an ethnic component to that. There's definitely a lot more on the lower end of the bell curve who are going to be affected by that and put out of work. So there is going to be this resistance to it.
The solution to that is definitely beyond my pay grade, but using these technologies for our interests, I think, it should be a priority for us, because it will help us punch above our weight in a hostile environment, and it will give us a competitive edge, because only high IQ people are going to be able to, one, you know, build this stuff out. I saw an essay, I think, that was forwarded by Greg, of someone who was saying that the alt-right is unable to overcome any of these things. And I was biting my tongue reading that. I think we're in a unique position to do that. And the folks who aren't, that will be a gap that can work in our favor.
Right. You know, the situation with the establishment and the internet, I think, is analogous to Sauron and his ring, or maybe something more mundane like an addict and his heroin, because I think they see that it's going to kill them. The existing establishment realizes that their power is going to be destroyed if this thing continues. And now if we go to Web 2.0 without the choke points, the pressure points that they can still bring pressure to deplatform us, that really is going to make them much more vulnerable. The trouble is that they're so invested in it, they can't live without it either. So it's going to kill them, but they can't live without it, right? The heroin's going to kill you, but you think you can't live without it. And there are many, many instances of people who die because they simply cannot kick these habits. And I don't think that the existing global economy, the existing political establishment, can kick the internet. I just don't think they can do it. And if they can't control it, it's going to destroy them.
No, it's not possible.
There's way too much money in it.
Oh, no. The banking institutions, government institutions are totally dependent on the internet. And they may not have the best or the freshest software. I mean, a lot of them are still running COBOL and stuff decades old. But in order to remove us, they would have to yank out the internet from underneath themselves. They'd have to literally cut off all of their own noses just to spite our face.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to happen. I think that that means that we have great reason for long-term optimism. We have some short-term crises. We're putting out the fires that are burning right now. We've almost put out the fire about losing our hosting. I guess that's proceeding according to plan. I'm rubbing my hands together, if you can hear. And so that's good. But once we get the existing fires out, we're going to start working on these other things, more long-term things, because, like I said, winter's here. But if we can get through this, in the very long term, I just don't see how we can be stopped, because we tell the truth about the world's most important matters while the entire establishment is premised on lies and hiding truths because they have to hide the horrible consequences of the lies that they live by and force upon the rest of us. I just think if they cannot shut us down without destroying themselves, that eventually enough truth will out and enough resistance will coalesce, that the system that exists today will come to an end. And I'm excited to see that the vulnerabilities that are currently baked into the internet as it exists today, and that we're suffering from terribly, in essence, they're temporary. We can work around them. And by working around them, we're actually getting closer to what the essence of the whole internet was supposed to be in the first place. That I think is really interesting.
In a way, we have to become sort of like our enemies were 100 years ago and, you know, kind of work from the shadows and think ahead and try to be one step ahead of the establishment. You know, in a way, from the way you're making it sound, if we pursue these efforts, you know, ironically, the alternative or the new right or whatever you want to call us, we could end up being at the cutting edge of sort of anti-establishmentarianism.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And we would have the tools. We could have the tools where I could even imagine where it becomes very hip and people know about it and they're wondering, where the hell can I get one of these pods? You know?
You know? Right.
Just like, you know, people at a rave, you know, about drugs now. And it's like, here I can get, you know, this great little pod. And then there's also the opportunity if I want to make money with it or on it.
The real red pills. This will really blow your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. You thought free videos and porn were cool. Check this out.
Exactly.
One thing that I do think we need to think about is, as the culture war starts to boil even further, is kind of figure out we've got finite resources, even though the resources are growing, and we need to do triage in terms of what we look into and what we try to deploy first. If we try to boil the ocean, we're gonna have a lot of problems and we would fail, but we're not that stupid. So I think we just need to kind of know, take us at any given time, maybe we assess every 6 months, every 12 months, whatever, but figure out where we're at. And then by talking to the people that are doing activism on the street and in other places, what are the tools that, you know, we need now that we need in the future, and use that to guide our resources. And then obviously there's sort of long-term R&D that has to go on, you know, independent of all of those. But just like a company rolls out products or test markets them, we need to do that with groups of our people, see what works, what catches on. And especially if we're trying to use this technology as a way to be a gateway drug for red pilling. What are the ideas and the marketing ideas that we could use so that we can smuggle or bring this into the culture?
Yeah. We're definitely seeing what works and what doesn't work as far as street level activism over this past summer and beyond. We can see the examples of the identitarians in Europe and the hit and run guerrilla style activism where you get in and get out and don't make that much of a prolonged fuss versus the older concept of trying to have street battles and make a stronger stand through strength of numbers and whatnot. These internet technologies, these emerging internet technologies are analogous to that, where we have to be adaptable, we have to be flexible, we have to be distributed, and if there's any node of strength where they're going to try to attack us, we have to be okay with that and be able to reform around it. And I think that all these emerging technologies are kind of being built up with that in mind, which is definitely a really good thing.
I think it's true. I think the principles of fourth generation warfare can be applied, you know, to the internet and what's going on now as much as in the field. I think there's a tendency, maybe because of our being more historically informed, that we look to the past as the models. And oftentimes people are very enamored of 1933. But back then, one of the reasons they punched above their weight was they were doing all kinds of cutting edge stuff. in terms of media and getting their message out and using phonograph records because they were banned from the radio, things like that, and these big visible parades and things. Well, now you don't need, all you need is to get in, get out, and then have your event or your banner seen by, you know, 2 million people the following morning, and you've had a virtual parade that nobody can erase.
Exactly.
Yeah. Kinda like, so we need to be thinking like that, because really all you're trying to do is, it's sort of like you're trying to catch eyeballs and mind share, and the tools for doing that now have dramatically changed in the last 80 years.
Yeah, and you know, Hitler, we can actually Hitler do invented it. The modern political campaign, really. He invented the multimedia campaign, traveling from city to city, making all these appearances. He was really the first person to do that, going from city to city across the country using airplanes, trains, and automobiles. He was an innovator in that, and everyone's doing the same thing today. So let's think of how to be the next great innovators in political propaganda and political activism.
Yeah. Maybe we don't need flying Valkyries. Maybe we need flying monkeys. So there's all kinds of things I think that are possible. We just need to think outside the box, because we have a tool chest that's never existed in history, just like we're in a surveillance state that's never existed in history. And using these new tools for the same stuff that their precursors were used 100 years ago is not going to give us the same bang for the buck.
No.
Well, we've been going at this for about an hour. So, Lewis, are there some final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I just think basically we need to, both on an individual level and as a movement, we need to amp up our game. And the best thing we can do is kind of bloom where we're planted for, on an individual level. Learn as much as you can that you're comfortable with, and then look to people that know more and, you know, take their advice or have them tell you what the next steps are. As a movement, we need to start deploying the tools and, you know, funding the development of some of the stuff that's very exciting that can make everything much easier. Because if we can create essentially a digital ethnostate where we can have a diaspora where we're virtual citizens and can govern ourselves and communicate with ourselves, almost like very, very high tech and in-group Amish across national borders, and nobody can shut us down, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, that actually gives us more opportunities than any revolutionaries have ever had before, potentially.
Exactly.
Well, guys, thank you so much. This has been a very, very good conversation, and it's definitely the first of many. I'm not going to say I hope it is. I know it will be, because we're in this for the long term. This is the beginning of, well, every day when I get up, I tell myself that I'm going to go to my computer and make history. And we are all operating under the assumption that what we do can change history. And the fact that our enemies are trying to shut us down shows that they're operating on that assumption about us as well. We're changing history. We're making history. So, and you guys out there in our listening audience and our donors, you're helping us make it too. So thank you very much. And we'll hear you again. See you again in a week's time.
See you next week.
Take care, everyone.